Hello and happy Halloween. It's time to read from today's Sioux City Journal for Saturday, October 31st, 2020. My name is John Reef and I'll be reading you the stories today. Here's a look at what I'll be reading. I'll start with a look at the weather and the mini editorial, then we'll move to the front page stories and inside stories of local interest in the inside pages. Then at the 20-minute mark, we'll do the opinion page and any letters to the editor. At the 30-minute mark, the obituaries, followed by sports and more feature stories, and wrapping up with Dear Abby. Looking at the weather for today, mostly sunny and increasingly windy, a high of 58 degrees, winds west-northwest at 12 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies, winds subsiding, winds out of the northwest 12 to 25, still a low down to 27. Then cooler, plenty of sunshine though, a high of 44 degrees for Sunday, winds northwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour. A low Sunday night of 28 degrees, and then plenty of sunshine and really nice on Monday, a high of 61 degrees, winds west 6 to 12 miles an hour. Monday night's low of 37, Tuesday mild, plenty of sunshine, a high of 67 degrees on Tuesday, winds south at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Tuesday night's low of 42, and still pretty nice, partly sunny and mild on Wednesday, a high of 66. Looking at the mini editorial today from William F. Burroughs of Sioux City, and it reads as follows. Terry Branstad claimed that he still considers Xi Jinping to be an old friend. With old friends like that, who needs enemies? Again, that from William F. Burroughs of Sioux City. On the top of the front page, election stuff. Rivals enter final stretch. This is from Waterford Township, Michigan. President Donald Trump dangled a promise to get a weary, fearful nation, quoting here, back to normal on Friday as he looked to campaign past the political damage of the devastating pandemic. It was a tantalizingly rosy pitch in sharp contrast to Democratic rival Joe Biden, who pledged to level with America about tough days still ahead after Tuesday's election. In a campaign that has been dominated by the COVID-19 pandemic that has killed more than 227,000 Americans and staggered the economy, the candidates' clashing overtures stood as a reflection of their leadership styles and policy prescriptions for a suffering United States. Trump and Biden both spent Friday crisscrossing the Midwest, the hardest hit part of the nation, in the latest surge of virus cases. Trump was in Michigan and Biden here in Iowa before they both held events in Wisconsin and Minnesota. With 4 days until the election and more than 86 million votes already cast, time is running out for Trump and Biden to change the contours of a race framed largely around the incumbent's handling of the pandemic. Biden is leading most national polls and has a narrow advantage in many of the critical battlegrounds that could decide the race. Trump, billing himself as an optimist, says the nation has, quoting here again, turned the corner, end quote, from the outbreak that still kills about 1,000 Americans each day. He speaks hopefully of coming treatments and potential vaccines that have yet to receive approval. Biden dismisses Trump's talk as a siren song that can only prolong the virus and pledges a nationwide focus on reinstituting measures meant to slow the spread of the disease. He said, "A long, dark winter," Trump scoffed Friday at a rally in Michigan. "Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Just what our country needs is a long, dark winter and a leader who talks about it." Trump's rallies, which draw thousands of supporters, have served as representations of the sort of reopening he has been preaching. With spotty use of masks and a lack of social distancing, they flout state and local guidelines that he deems too onerous as he speaks as though the virus has largely disappeared. Trump and his aides speak openly about catering to the support of those fed up by state restrictions, and he has encouraged chants among his supporters calling for the imprisonment of local officials who have instituted them. Biden, for his part, referenced Trump's comments last summer that the virus is what it is. He told supporters in Des Moines that it is what it is because he is who he is. These guys are something else, man. Trump's closing appeal to Make America Great Again, paints a halcyon image of the nation's condition during pre-coronavirus times that contrasts with Biden's charge to build back better. The president's focus on returning the nation's economy to the boom times of 2019 resonates with some voters, but overlooks the divided and rancorous politics that swirled around impeachment and the persistent problems of inequality. As the nation set new records for confirmed cases, Wall Street closed out a punishing week Friday, with the S&P 500 posting its first back-to-back monthly loss since the pandemic first gripped the economy in March. Friday marked the beginning of the critical final stretch before the election. Trump's closing sprint includes four stops in Pennsylvania on Saturday and nearly a dozen events in the final 48 hours across states he carried in 2016. Biden, after visiting Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota on Friday, will hit Michigan on Saturday, where he'll hold a joint rally with former President Barack Obama. Biden will close out his campaign Monday in a familiar battleground, Pennsylvania, the state where he was born and the one he's visited more than any other in his campaign. The Biden team announced the candidate, his wife, Jill, running mate Senator Kamala Harris, and her husband, Doug Emhoff, plan to, quoting here, fan out across all four corners of the state, end quote. After stopping in Green Bay on Friday, Trump will be back in Wisconsin on Monday for a visit to Kenosha. He appears to lag in recent polling behind his 2016 numbers in the GOP-leaning suburbs around Milwaukee, a key area for successful Republican campaigns in the state. In other developments, more than 9 million ballots had been cast as of early Friday in Texas, exceeding its 8.9 plus million votes during all of 2016's race, according to an Associated Press tally of Texas early vote data. Also, Georgia officials say they don't expect power outages caused by severe weather that swept through parts of the state to interrupt Election Day voting. The remnants of Hurricane Zeta, which hit southeastern Louisiana as a Category 2 storm Wednesday, swept across northern Georgia, knocking down trees and leaving more than a million residents without power early Thursday. But power crews quickly sprang to action, working nonstop to restore electricity. Also, nearly 30,000 recipients of what a judge described as electoral terror robocalls designed to scare people from voting in four states, including Ohio and Pennsylvania, received new court-ordered calls on Friday, saying the earlier call had false information that intimidated voters. Back to the front page, and the front page story of local interest, Dialing In on Election is the title. Siouxland students have strong opinions on Trump and Biden, this by Brett Hayward, Dateline Sioux City. For weeks of the summer and into the fall semester, a Woodbury Central High School student has driven a moped with a large blue flag in support of President Donald Trump hung from the back. Elsewhere, vehicles with stickers in support of the Republican president and Democratic nominee Joe Biden are parked in Siouxland school student lots. Some high schoolers themselves are wearing coronavirus face masks associated with their favorite candidates and dialing into the big election battle by viewing TikTok and varying social media posts. More than that, while they may have viewed the 2016 election with interest when in middle school, the oldest high school pupils can vote this year by virtue of having turned 18. Among them is Max Braunstein, a senior at East High School in Sioux City. "I feel like my generation is starting to show up," Braunstein said. Many national reports have said young people in the 18 to 29 age range are geared up to vote, and nearly 7 million have already done so, which puts the total approaching three times the amount for that age group in 2016. Woodbury County Auditor Pat Gill said Thursday he has no crystal ball to predict how many high school students will vote, but shared that 900 18-year-olds are registered to vote in the county. Campaign ads are unavoidable in many platforms, and the presidential race discussions by the teenagers are not only happening in some government classrooms, but also hallways. Brett Glover of West High School is teaching five class sections this fall, primarily American government, in which the election is a prime topic. Glover said having an election is a good motivator for the students to dial in even more into how elections play out. The whole country is talking about Donald Trump and Joe Biden right now. The kids are picking this up, he said. Glover said his goal as a teacher is to keep his personal opinions out of it and to show pupils how to look into the veracity of campaign claims. It is not my job to tell students what to think, but to help them to try to understand why they think what they do. I try to get students to look at both sides of an argument to see where the other side is coming from, he said. I practice civil discourse, which I like to think is the art of disagreeing agreeably. With Trump a polarizing figure, Glover said, the government class students can become passionate in talking out campaign issues, but it never gets out of hand. Glover has made voting materials available in class and noted some pupils have already voted, but said the sad reality is many seniors who want to vote won't turn 18 until later in the school year. Chloe Fries is a senior at North High School who is disappointed she won't turn 18 in time to vote this year. If I could vote, I would vote for Trump. He is just so great. His philosophy is what I would vote for, Fries said, adding an example that she supports strict enforcement of immigration policies. Fries said she doesn't have any classes this fall in which the election is being discussed, but she's fine with that because observations from social media demonstrate that the North student body leans liberal. She said there is a, quoting here, stigma, end quote, that comes with being conservative in her high school. I don't really like doing politics here at school. I think people here are so far left, Fries said. It is more popular if you don't like Trump. Fries likes to educate herself on the election at times by reading through Reddit chains, but more so by doing Google search of topics where she takes cautions to look for reputable sources such as the Washington Post. Bronstein says he enjoyed voting early Monday at Longline's Family Rec Center in Sioux City since, quoting here, it fit my schedule to beat the crowd, and expects he'll keep doing that every election cycle. It wasn't very busy. The poll workers were very kind. It was a good experience, he said. Bronstein wouldn't say who he voted for, but said he leans to the liberal side. He said he became politically attuned this summer in the days where there was a large national debate over actions by police following the death of George Floyd, a black man in Minneapolis. It was for me finally seeing the true nature of systemic racism, Bronstein said. That made me realize this issue may not be about me, but it is mine all the same. Bronstein said he's been glad to see teens get involved beyond voting, but also with signing petitions, contacting members of Congress, and donating to candidates and causes they like. He said the views of fellow East students seem to be split on Biden and Trump, and he's never seen discussions get heated. Bronstein has a course, Advanced Placement Government, in which the election has been widely discussed, and the topic has also popped up in his sociology and Western civilization classes. He praised government teacher Jacob Novosad for keeping students updated on the key national issues that have informed the big election, including the October discussions that led to the quick placement of Amy Coney Barrett on the U.S. Supreme Court to fill the opening created by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. West's Glover said the election day will be notable in the class, but he thinks the day after will be more important. The important lesson that day will be to continue to practice civil discourse, Glover said. Every 4 years there will be a winner and a loser. We have to get back to working together. Final story on the front page, district moves one class online. Sioux City reported 10 staff and 11 students tested positive for virus. This by Brett Hayworth, Dateline Sioux City. For the first time in 4 weeks, rising numbers of positive cases of the novel coronavirus have forced a Sioux City school district classroom to move from in-person to online learning. The district is continuing the Friday practice of releasing the number of positive cases determined within the district over each week. The newest recap of positive cases showed 10 employees and 11 pupils tested positive. The class section that moved online was at Unity Elementary School. In the Friday reports from October 9th through October 23rd, no class sections had enough virus cases to necessitate moving from in-person instruction to online instruction. From the second week of September through the first week of October, at least one class section, primarily in elementary schools, had moved online each week. Combined, more than a dozen class sections have moved online in the 2020-2021 school year. The release noted that for each positive case reported, contact tracing is done in conjunction with the Siouxland District Health Department. Individuals who test positive, as well as any individuals identified as close contacts, are directed to self-isolate or self-quarantine and take other appropriate measures in accordance with state and public health guidance. District workers continue taking steps such as extensive cleaning and sanitizing, and sanitizing places that are heavily used in buildings. Cases that have climbed sharply in the last 6 weeks in Woodbury County. As of mid-afternoon Friday, the number of positive cases in the county moved near 7,500. The number of county residents who have died from COVID-19 is 99. Last week, the number of people testing positive for the virus included 8 pupils and 6 employees, and the number of people testing positive for the virus for the week ended October 16th included 3 pupils and 9 employees. The totals were 6 students and 6 employees testing positive through the October 9th week, with one classroom at Leeds Elementary moved to online instruction. On October 2nd, the district reported 16 employees and 10 pupils had tested positive when several courses moved online. For the week ending September 25th, 17 workers tested positive, as did 15 students, while 4 students and 4 employees tested positive for the week ended September 18th, and 5 pupils and 7 staffers tested positive in the second week through September 11th. Moving now to page A3, time for a change to America on our clocks and watches. It's time for a change for most of the United States. The clock is running out once more for daylight saving time. Standard time begins at 2 a.m. local time Sunday. Until almost next spring, in states red and blue and in between, it'll be lighter earlier in the morning and darker earlier in the evening. And there's no debate about the immediate benefit of the time shift, an extra hour of sleep when you hit the hay tonight. Hawaii, American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and most of Arizona don't observe daylight savings time. It is incumbent to stick with the status quo. Daylight saving time returns at 2 a.m. local time on Sunday, March 14th. According to a poll last year by the Associated Press-NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, 7 in 10 Americans preferred not to switch back and forth, but there was no agreement on which time clocks ought to follow. Moving now to the opinion page and other voices, today is from Tom Miller, the Iowa Attorney General. The title is Iowa Elections Can Be Model for Nation. This election, I believe Iowa can be the best in the nation. Iowa has already set a record for absentee voting, beating the 2016 record of 649,672 votes. Nearly a million Iowans have requested absentee ballots this election. We can also beat the 2012 overall turnout record set in 2012 when 73.3% of eligible voters cast votes. As I've said, I am confident that Iowa will ensure all eligible votes, including mailed ballots, will be counted this November. I believe this for several reasons. At the top of the list are our 99 county auditors. They take seriously their independence, which voters should appreciate. I've been in contact with them, and I'm impressed by their efforts to prepare for a record turnout amid the constraints of a pandemic. The auditors and their staffs have worked hard to find safe ways for voters to drop off absentee ballots. These auditors assure me that they will be able to count these votes quickly and accurately, and that we will have the results the night of the election day. They have been assisted by a directive from Secretary of State Paul Pate and approved by lawmakers to begin opening absentee ballots in the Saturday before the election, which would be today. I also have great confidence that our postal workers and letter carriers will deliver these ballots on time. A New York Times analysis of postal data shows that during the pandemic, Iowa has had some of the fewest delivery delays of any state in the nation. My greatest hope rests with you, the voter. This election, Iowa can be a model of civility for the rest of the country. Reports of tensions, shouting matches, and other disruptions have emerged near polling places in other states. Citizens have contacted my office concerned that violence could happen here. Let me be clear, voter intimidation will not be tolerated in Iowa. In Iowa, a person commits a felony if he or she intimidates, threatens, or coerces a person to do or to refrain from voting. It is also illegal to interfere with the validity of an election or to loiter or electioneer at a polling place. Precinct election officials have the authority to ask the sheriff to arrest anyone acting disorderly or attempting to interfere with the election. If you see problems at polling sites, we encourage you to report them to election officials and local law enforcement. It is, of course, a person's right to rally, display signs, and express their views on election day. But one cannot post signs, congregate, solicit votes, or loiter within 300 feet of the door to a polling place. Our office is working with the Secretary of State, county auditors, county attorneys, and other officials to uphold Iowa's long tradition of fair elections. All of us ask your cooperation. No matter our political differences, we can agree that all eligible voters should feel comfortable voting in person if they so choose. Iowans are known for many virtues. We look out for our neighbors. We show respect for others. We take our civic duties seriously. The nation needs such an example. This election, we are counting on you. Again, that from Tom Miller, the Iowa Attorney General, and that is from Other Voices on the Opinion page. Moving now to page A2, Biden returns to Iowa. A regular visitor to Iowa during the months preceding the February presidential caucuses, Joe Biden made Democrats here wait until almost the final moment of the 2020 campaign. Time will soon tell whether the trip was worth Biden's effort. Meanwhile, he thrilled hundreds of supporters with a drive-in style campaign rally at the Iowa State Fairgrounds on Friday, just 4 days before Election Day. Biden, the Democratic nominee and former U.S. Vice President, is locked in a close race in Iowa with Republican President Donald Trump, according to polling on the race. National polling and polling in other critical swing states suggest Biden is in a good position to defeat Trump. I did not have a last-minute visit from Joe Biden on my crazy 2020 bingo card, Sean Bagniewski, the chairman of the Polk County Democrats, said Friday before Biden's remarks, but it shows how close Iowa is. The rally was held drive-in style in a large parking lot at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. Those who attended watched from their vehicles, and Biden's remarks were blasted over speakers and a shortwave radio. More than 300 vehicles attended, the organizers said. Trump won Iowa by nearly 10 points 4 years ago, but this year he is running neck and neck with Biden. 538.com's average of, 538.com's average of polling on the race in Iowa shows the candidates within 0.3% of each other. Perhaps motivated by those polling numbers, the presidential candidates have suddenly shown interest in Iowa after skipping it the entire summer. In addition to Friday's event being Biden's first trip to Iowa during the general election campaign, Trump only made his first general election campaign stop here just 2 weeks ago. Vice President Mike Pence has been a more frequent campaign visitor to Iowa, including an event earlier this week. Quoting here, in 2008 and 2012, you placed your trust in Barack Obama and me, and we worked for you for the entire country, Biden told the crowd. Well, I'll do it again in 2020. Biden, who also had events scheduled Friday in Minnesota and Wisconsin, reiterated his campaign pledge to serve as a president that represents the entire country, not just those who vote for him. He said his campaign welcomes a broad spectrum of political ideologies. I'm running as a proud Democrat, but I will govern as an American president, Biden said. I will work as hard for those who don't support me as those who do. In my administration, there will be no red states or blue states, just the United States of America. Folks, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. That's the job of a president, a duty to care for everyone, to heal. Teresa Greenfield, who is in a tight race of her own for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat, also spoke during the program and to reporters. Greenfield, the Democratic challenger, is locked in a similarly close race with Republican first-term incumbent U.S. Senator Joni Ernst. We are thrilled that the vice president has stopped by Iowa. It clearly shows that it's a battleground state, and it's one we can win and we can flip, Greenfield said. And of course, when we take back the presidency, we'll win this U.S. Senate seat and we'll flip the majority in the United States Senate. Republicans noted Biden's previous absence from Iowa during the general election campaign. Jeff Kaufman, chairman of the Republican Party of Iowa, told reporters earlier Friday that he felt compelled to formally welcome the former vice president back to Iowa, saying it had been 271 days since Biden was in the state. They're ignoring the heartland, Kaufman said of the Biden campaign. They're not visiting until the very last second. We're going to prove that it is too little, too late. Terry Branstad, the former Iowa governor and U.S. ambassador to China, said he is concerned about the future of Iowa's first-in-the-nation caucuses if Biden is elected, suggesting Biden does not like Iowa because of his fourth-place finish in this year's caucuses. The Iowa caucuses will be history if Biden gets elected president, Branstad charged. Trump has pledged to preserve Iowa's first-in-the-nation spot. Regardless, Kaufman said the immediate focus for Iowa Republicans is, quoting here, the harm that Biden could potentially cause if he were to be successful in this election, end quote. During his remarks, Biden talked about the COVID-19 pandemic, pledged to raise taxes only on those making $400,000 per year or more, and promised to preserve the federal Affordable Care Act health care law and expand it with a Medicare-like public option. He also touched on agriculture policy, the U.S. military, social justice, and climate change. Carol Meyer, a 63-year-old retired woman from Mason City who attended the event, said she is optimistic but not confident in Biden's prospects in Iowa. She was similarly hesitant about Biden's prospects overall against Trump, according to a Pool report. I don't want to be overconfident, Meyer said, according to the Pool report. We have to work until the last minute. Next on A2, Ernst campaigns with Cruz in northwest Iowa. This Dateline Lamar's. Accompanied by U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, U.S. Senator Joni Ernst pushed toward the finish line of her re-election campaign with a stop in which she said Republicans should vote to preserve the political balance from shifting to a far left bent. The folks on the left are trying to radically change who we are as a great nation, Ernst said. Less government, less government, he yelled out Scott Rowe of Owens, Iowa, as Ernst finished her remarks to applause from a crowd of 80 people at Brown Century Theater in downtown Lamar's. Ernst's Fighting for Iowa tour also made stops Friday in the northwest Iowa cities of Sioux City, Sioux Center, and Alta. Ernst was joined by fellow Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, Governor Kim Reynolds, and Cruz, who ran for president in 2016 and won the Iowa caucuses before losing the nomination to Donald Trump. The Democrats have gone bat crap crazy. That, by the way, is a technical medical definition. They are galloping to the left, Cruz said. Ernst is vying with Democrat Teresa Greenfield for the U.S. Senate, for which final voting will take place on Tuesday, 4 weeks after a flood of early voting began in Iowa on October 5th. Ernst and the others lamented the large amount of spending from the Greenfield campaign and the groups supportive of her. The polls show a tight race, and in an interview after the event, Ernst declined to share what her internal polls show. My gut says we're going to win it, she had told the crowd a bit earlier. Ernst continued a recent line that ties into the criticisms President Donald Trump has shared of Democratic challenger Joe Biden, that he is campaigning little and avoiding public scrutiny. Greenfield has been hiding with Biden in her basement. If she can't come out of her basement to look you in the eye, she doesn't deserve to represent the great state of Iowa, Ernst said. We don't want Greenfield here, a man yelled out from the left of the stage. Ernst noted Greenfield has only made appearances in about 50 of the 99 Iowa counties. She said if Greenfield wins, control of the U.S. Senate could move to Democrats who would seek to undermine Second Amendment gun rights, move to so-called Medicare for All, she termed socialized medicine, raise taxes, and increase the number of states by two through adding Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C., which she said would undercut the clout of states like Iowa. One of the biggest applause lines of the event involved the several mentions of Amy Coney Barrett being added to the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday. Barrett was approved 52-48 with all but one Republican supporting the nomination and all Democrats opposed. Ernst, Grassley, and Cruz all voted to confirm Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Iowa Democratic Party spokesman Jeremy Bush, in a release, pointed derisively at Ernst's choice to have Cruz campaign with her. Bush noted Cruz is beholden to big oil and has advocated against the corn-based ethanol fuel that is important to Iowa's economy. In an interview, Ernst said she will campaign broadly across Iowa through Monday, then cast her ballot on Tuesday from Red Oak, where she lives, and watch results in Des Moines. Greenfield on Friday planned to attend Biden's rally in Des Moines, then hold a campaign event at a farm in Marion County. Republican Vice President Mike Pence campaigned on behalf of Trump and Ernst in Des Moines on Thursday. A presidential election is also shaping up tightly in Iowa, a state that Ernst said is purple or evenly split politically. As is typical campaign talk at this point in any October of an election cycle, the speakers pointed to the necessity of people voting. Reynolds said the reliable Republicans in Northwest Iowa need to again do their part to offset Democratic voting in more populous areas. We are counting on you because that's how we offset Polk County, the governor said. Shows an inset picture flanked from the left by U.S. Senator Charles Grassley, Governor Kim Reynolds, and U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst speaks during a campaign event to a group of Republican supporters in Lamars, Iowa, on Friday. It's time now to read the obituary, starting with Dakota Dunes. James L. Fowler, 89 years old, of Dakota Dunes, passed away Wednesday, October 28th, at Stony Brook Assisted Living Center in Dakota Dunes. Services will be 4 p.m. Sunday at First Presbyterian Church in Sioux City. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. The funeral service will be live-streamed on YouTube. Due to the ongoing pandemic, the family requests all attendees to wear masks and practice social distancing. Private burial will be Monday in Graceland Park Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences can be expressed at meyerbroschapels.com. Jim was born on May 23, 1931, to L. Lowell and Stella Fowler of Rockwell City, Iowa. He graduated from Rockwell City High School in 1949 and enrolled at Morningside College in Sioux City in the fall of 1949. During this time, he fell in love with Morningside and his future wife, Joanne Hammerstrom. While at Morningside, Jim played football and basketball, where he received all North Central Conference recognition for the football. On October 24, 1952, he and Joanne were married at First Presbyterian Church in Sioux City. Jim was president of the Morningside Alumni Association in 1962 and president of the Alumni M Club in 1966, the same year he was inducted into the M Club Hall of Fame. Jim was honored to read the citation for Coach George Allen when he was given an honorary doctorate of law degree from Morningside College in 1973. He was proud to be a Maroon, Chief, and Mustang, and enjoyed supporting Morningside athletics. Jim served in the U.S. Army from 1952 to 1955. After discharge, he began his career with the American Popcorn Company, also known as Jolly Time, starting in vendor advertising sales. He was named Vice President of Sales and Marketing in 1966 and appointed to the company's Board of Directors in 1967. In 1973, he was appointed Vice President and Secretary of the Board of Directors. Jim was active in the popcorn industry, including chairing the Popcorn Institute's marketing committee for more than 20 years. He retired after a fulfilling 41-year career from Jolly Time in 1996. He was a 68-year member of First Presbyterian Church in Sioux City, where he served as a deacon, a member of the session, and a member of the Board of Trustees. Jim served as president of both the Sioux City Boat Club and Dakota Dunes Country Club Advisory Board. He was also a member of the McCook Lake Isaac Walton League and served on the board. He served on the North Sioux City Economic Development Corporation for the last 20 years. Always a sportsman, Jim loved hunting and fishing. He was seldom without a good hunting dog, from Flicka, his miniature golden setter, to Jolly and Cricket, his English pointers, and to Hannah, Hershey, and Coda, his Labrador retrievers. Jim enjoyed golfing, especially at Heritage Palms in Indio, California, where he and Joanne spent their winters upon retirement, making wonderful memories together. Memorial donations may be made to Morningside College. From Sloan, Iowa, Kenneth J. Peterson. Kenneth John Peterson, 76 years old, of Sloan, passed away Wednesday, October 28th, at his home surrounded by his family. Memorial services will be at 3 p.m. Monday at Evangelical Covenant Church in Sloan with the Reverend Richard Moore officiating. Social distancing measures must be followed due to COVID-19 restrictions. Masks are encouraged. Burial will be in Fairview Cemetery in Alberton, Iowa, with military rites to be provided by the U.S. Marine Corps and the American Legion Smith Rhodes Post 295 of Sloan. Visitation will be noon to 3 p.m. Monday at the church. Arrangements are under the directions of Rush Family Care Service in Iowa. Condolences may be left online for the family at rushfamilycareservice.com. Kenneth was born on January 15, 1944, in Sioux City, the son of Herbert and Dorothy Jacobson Peterson. He graduated from Westwood High School in 1962. He entered the U.S. Marine Corps on January 21, 1964, and was honorably discharged on September 16, 1966. Kenneth John and Marcia K. Kuhn Peterson were united into marriage on May 3, 1968, in Omaha. Kenneth worked at Knox Gelatin, Goleta, of Sioux City. He was also a lifetime farmer and farmed until his retirement. He was an avid Iowa Hawkeye fan and loved to watch football and baseball. He enjoyed spending time with his grandchildren, especially having tea parties. He was a member of Evangelical Covenant Church in Sloan. Kenneth was very active in his church and loved the Lord. He also was a member of the American Legion Smith Rhodes Post 295 in Sloan. From Ida Grove, Roma Lovett, L-O-V-E-T-T, 98 years old, died Monday, October 26th. Service will be November 2nd, 10:30 a.m., St. Paul Lutheran Church in Ida Grove. Burial will be Storm Lake Cemetery. Visitation November 2nd, 9:30 a.m. at the church. From Marcus, Iowa, Michael R. Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, 68 years old, passed away Thursday, October 29th. Service will be November 2nd, 10:30 a.m. at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Remsen. Burial will be at Marcus Amherst Cemetery. Visitation November 1st, 2 p.m. at the church. From Pearson, Iowa, Shirley A. Campbell, 84 years old, passed away Friday, October 30th. From Sioux City, Tracy Yockey, 36 years old, died Friday, October 30th. From Granville, Lucille Allers Schumacher, 91 years old, of Granville, died on October 29th at Orange City Area Health System in Orange City. Private family burial will be today at St. Joseph's Cemetery. A mass and celebration of life will be held at a later date. Lucille was born on January 15, 1929, in rural Granville, the daughter of William P. and Mary Schwartz Ehlers. She was raised and educated in Granville. Lucille married classmate Ambrose Bush Schumacher on June 20, 1953. Bush and Lucille raised seven children in Granville. Lucille was a lifelong member of St. Joseph Catholic Church in Granville. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorials to Rose Kramer, 2554 Rosewood Drive, Dubuque, Iowa 52001, for a memorial to be established at a later date. From Orange City, Rodney Villinga, 100 years old, died Sunday, October 25th. Private service will be October 31st, 1:30 p.m., Trinity Reformed Church of Orange City, and burial will be at West Lawn Cemetery. From Spencer, Ronald Doran, D-O-R-A-N, 88 years old, died Wednesday, October 28th. Service will be November 2nd, 1:30 p.m. Burial will be at Lone Tree Cemetery. Visitation November 1st, 2 to 4 p.m. And the final one for today from Mobile, Marvin Earl Fluelling, 71 years old, died Saturday, October 24th, 2020. Celebration of life will be November 2nd, 5:30 p.m. Burial will be at Arlington Township Cemetery. Going back to the Section AA4, Parker challenges Auditor, County Auditor Gill. This is by Nick Heitrich, Dateline Sioux City. Woodbury County voters will decide on November 3rd whether to re-elect a county auditor and recorder with more than two decades of experience or choose a political newcomer. Democrat Pat Gill, 65, is seeking a seventh four-year term to the office. Barbara Parker, 61, a Republican from Salix, is retired and is a former city clerk there. The office holder also serves as election commissioner, a role that has taken on increased importance in a year in which the coronavirus pandemic has led to record numbers of absentee ballot requests. Gill said upholding the integrity of elections is important to him. Quoting here, people absolutely should be confident that this election will be run cleanly and their ballots will be counted, Gill said. During her campaign, Parker said some voters have raised concerns about whether their vote is safe or will be counted. Quoting here, I'm glad I stepped in. I feel that I can change things up and boost voter confidence, said Parker, who added that she has not said Gill has done anything wrong. Gill has been the subject of two separate election-related lawsuits this cycle. In April, former Republican State Senator Rick Bertrand sued Gill in the county, saying Gill's plan to have only two polling sites open during the primary because of the coronavirus would suppress voter turnout. A judge later issued a consent order mandating five balloting sites. In August, President Donald Trump's re-election campaign and other Republican Party's organizations took Gill's office to court over absentee ballot request forms that were sent to registered voters. A judge ruled that Gill must resend blank absentee ballot request forms to voters after initially sending forms that had been sent with voter information already filled in, an action the judge ruled violated a directive from Iowa's Secretary of State that forms mailed to voters must be blank. Gill complied with the judge's order and said his actions were not partisan. We'd been doing that all along, Gill said, of sending applications with information filled in. It makes it easier for voters to participate, and voters appreciated that. Parker said mailing absentee requests with information already filled in lends itself to the possibility of fraud. She said the absentee ballot application process could be improved, and she'd like to help the state make changes. I think we need to be very vigilant in how we work with that, she said. I'd like to work with the Secretary of State on that. As a former city clerk, Parker said she's prepared for the county auditor's budgetary duties, and frequent contact with the office as a city clerk made her familiar with how the office works. I've worked with budgets and municipal financing at a much smaller level, but I think it will fit the bill because it's all the same. You have to make the budget work, Parker said. Earlier this year, Gill said he hoped to consolidate all county departments into one computer software system, making it easier for the office to compile budget information and for taxpayers to access it. He said he's committed to providing the public with easy access to county information and services. I've truly enjoyed serving the public in this position, he said. Next story, candidates vie for South Dakota legislative seats. Dateline North Sioux City by Brett Hayworth. Voters in the Southeast South Dakota will elect nine state legislators. Tuesday will serve in districts 16, 17, and 18. Polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., and early voting has been underway in South Dakota since late September. In South Dakota, the top two vote-getters in House races and the winner in Senate districts win two-year terms and advance to the next legislative session that begins in January in Pierre. There will be at least three new legislators in Southeast South Dakota District 16, 17, and 18. There are open seats in Senate District 18 and House District 17. A few of the Republican nominees on the ballot had June primary wins, while most were unopposed in landing on the November ballot. District 16 covers all of Union and parts of Lincoln County. District 17 takes in Clay and Turner counties, and District 18 covers Yankton County. The candidates include, for House District 16, incumbent Representatives David Anderson, a Republican from Hudson, and Representative Kevin Jensen, a Republican from Canton. There are no Democratic candidates on the ballot. For District 17, Caitlin Collier, a Democrat from Vermilion, Al Lieber, a Democrat from Vermilion, Richard Vasgard, a Republican from Centerville, and Sidney Davis, a Republican from Burbank. Representative Nancy Rasmussen, Republican from Hurley, unsuccessfully sought to move to Senate District 17 but lost by less than 10 votes in the June primary, while Representative Ray Ring, Democrat from Vermilion, is not running. In District 18, incumbent Representative Mike Stevens, a Republican from Yankton, and Ryan Quach, a Democrat from Yankton, are the only candidates on the ballot. Senate District 16, incumbent Senator Jim Boland, a Republican from Canton, is running unopposed. Senate District 17, incumbent Senator Arthur Roush, a Republican from Vermilion, Ailey Johns, a Democrat from Vermilion, and Gregory Baldwin, a Libertarian from Wakanda, are competing for this seat. And finally, from Senate District 18, former House member Gene Hohnhoff, a Republican from Yankton, and Jordan Foose, a Democrat from Yankton, are vying for the open seat. Senator Craig Kennedy, a Democrat from Yankton, is not seeking re-election. Sioux City man is sentenced on gun charge. A Sioux City man was sentenced Thursday to 6 years in federal prison on a gun charge. Cordero Witzel, 31, pleaded guilty in June in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of being a felon, drug user, and domestic abuser in possession of a firearm. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Sioux City police officers responding to a domestic disturbance on November 16th found Witzel on the porch outside the residence with a camouflage backpack. Officers interviewed a woman inside the home who had visible injuries. Witzel was arrested, and officers found a small baggie of methamphetamine lying on the porch where he had been seated. A loaded shotgun was found inside the backpack. Suspect in Sioux City murder charged with biting jail inmate's ear. This is by Nick Heitrek, Dateline Sioux City. A Carroll, Iowa man awaiting trial for the death of a Sioux City homeowner has been charged with biting a fellow jail inmate's ear. Gary Dames Jr., 46, is scheduled to be arraigned Monday in Woodbury District Court, Woodbury County District Court, on one count of willful injury causing serious injury. According to a complaint filed in the case, Dames got into an argument with another jail inmate over a card game on October 7th. The inmate told investigators he went to his cell, and a short time later, Dames entered his cell, pushed him into the wall, and attempted to gouge his right eye out, causing serious injury. Dames then bit the man's right ear, leaving teeth marks and ripping the earlobe from top to bottom. Ouch. The inmate was transported to Unity Point Health St. Luke's for treatment. Dames is being held on the Woodbury County in the Woodbury County Jail on a $1.035 million bond. He has pleaded not guilty to first-degree murder, commission of a specified unlawful activity, second-degree theft, and first-degree burglary for the July 16, 2019 death of Paul Smith. Dames is accused of killing Smith, 65 years old, during a fight after he broke into Smith's home at 314 20th Street and later took $120 in Smith's Ford Explorer. An autopsy report listed the cause of death as blunt force injuries to the head and neck. Strangulation also was a probable component, the report said. Police found Smith's body after responding to a call from Dane's estranged wife, who rented another room in Smith's building and said she was worried because she hadn't seen him for a while and witnessed Dane's driving Smith's vehicle. During a hearing Friday, public defender Joseph Reedy told District Judge Jeffrey Polson that Dames does not intend to waive his right to a speedy trial ahead of the January 5th trial deadline. Polson directed the prosecution and defense to work with court administration to schedule a firm trial date prior to the deadline. Dames also faces a second-degree burglary charge in separate case for a break-in at Smith's home 8 days before he was killed. Sioux City murder case suspended for suspect's mental health exam. A man accused of fatally stabbing his mother in a Sioux City apartment will undergo a mental health examination to gain a second opinion on whether he's mentally competent to stand trial. District Judge Jeffrey Neary on Friday granted a prosecution motion to have Paul Belk examined by a state-retained expert in order to give an opinion on his mental competency and his diminished capacity defenses. Neary suspended further proceedings in the case but left the December 1st trial date in place pending results of the exam. Belk, 31, of Beaufort, South Dakota, has pleaded not guilty in Woodbury County District Court to first-degree murder, willful injury, and possession of a controlled substance for the April 14th stabbing death of Lisa Belk at 3811 Peters Avenue. He's also accused of injuring his sister. Public defender Drew Munger filed notice in September that Belk would use insanity, diminished responsibility, and intoxication defenses. Munger submitted an opinion from Dr. Kunal Patra, a Sioux City psychiatrist, who examined Belk and determined he is not competent to stand trial. First Assistant Woodbury County Attorney Mark Campbell on Wednesday filed a motion to have Belk examined by forensic psychologist Tracy Thomas. Under Iowa's rules of criminal case procedures, the state has the right to have a defendant examined by its own expert on the defense of insanity and diminished responsibility. Campbell also has filed a motion challenging Belk's insanity and diminished responsibility defenses, an issue that will be addressed after Belk's mental health exam. According to court documents, Belk became upset with his sister and mother during a family gathering, retrieved a knife from the kitchen, and lunged at his mother 3 times with the knife, then slashed his 28-year-old sister in the shoulder. Lisa Belk, 55, was taken to Mercy One Medical Center, where she died of her injuries. The sister was treated for her injuries and released. If found guilty of first-degree murder, Belk would face a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. Looking at some sport, follow the stars. North Bowers both come home with titles. This is by Zach James, Dateline Sioux City. Jason Bowers threw his arms in the air and raised his index fingers to the sky as he crossed the finish line Friday at Kennedy Park in Fort Dodge, putting up a number one. The North High School senior realized in that moment that he had finally won a state championship. Bowers won the individual meet with a 5,000-meter time of 15 minutes, 31.20 seconds, beating Dubuque Hempstead senior Ryan Wingard's 15:45. A few minutes later, Bowers and the Stars found out the team championship trophy will also be going home with them. North won the Class 4A team championship with 75 points. Will Lower finished in fourth with 16:00.20. Kimane Keifel, 19th, with 16:32.90. Gabe Nash was 24th at 16:36.70. And Bishana Gutima rounded out the top five, scoring with a 27th place time of 16:40.10. Netnail Keifel finished in 30th place, 16:42.60. And Colin Greenwell finished 42nd, 16:48.40, to round out the Stars lineup. Morningside versus Dort for first place. When the season began, Morningside versus Northwestern in week one was circled because those programs have been the top two in the Great Plains Athletic Conference the past few seasons. Morningside won the game, and while the Mustangs are still undefeated at 5-0, the GPAC title still is on the line as another Sioux County team is challenging Morningside. Dort has never beaten Morningside, but the defenders have never had a team as good as they do now. Dort, which is 5-1 with its only loss coming to Northwestern, hosts Morningside at Open Space Field in Sioux Center at 1 p.m. Saturday with the first place in the GPAC on the line. While Morningside has dominated the series, Morningside head coach Steve Ryan knows that this is a different Dort team. "This is an extremely challenging game," Steve Ryan said. "They are playing great football. Last season, Morningside beat Dort 56-14, only the third time the Mustangs haven't scored at least 60 points against the defenders. Morningside has never scored fewer than 40 points against Dort, with the lowest total being a 41-0 victory in 2012. After scoring only 16 points in the first eight meetings combined, Dort has scored 14, 23, 21, and 14 points the past four seasons. This is also the first time Dort will be fully healthy for its game against Morningside. I can't remember the last time we played Morningside at full strength, and that's a huge thing," Dort coach Joel Penner said. "It's the first time Noah Clayburgh will play Morningside, and Levi Jungling missed last year's game as well. We had a really great week on practice. I think our guys have a total belief that we can win this game, but we're not spending all of our time thinking about it. We're thinking about what it takes to get better." Okay, now it's time for Dear Abby, and the first letter is from Ancient History, and it's entitled, "Man is Disinclined to Meet with Newfound Half-Sisters." "Dear Abby, my father, who has been gone for 40 years, had many good qualities, and he provided well for our family. I loved him and treasure many of the memories I have of my time with him. However, his deep-seated lechery overwhelmed his life and destroyed what might have been an idyllic 50s youth for me. It caused great pain and embarrassment to my mother, my sister, and me. I recently received communication from four different half-sisters I didn't know of who discovered our kinship through DNA tracking. I am indisposed to a reunion. I may have felt different at one time, but I am 81 now. I no longer travel and am leaning more towards releasing relationships than making new ones. My wife has had a stroke, so we pretty much confine our entertaining to our children and grandchildren. I deeply regret any pain my father's libidinous nature has caused, but I am not inclined to spend time dealing with the results of his affairs. I don't want to be cold. They seem nice, but it's too late in the game for me. Do you agree?" Signed, Ancient History. "Dear History, I do agree. Because your father's flings caused you, your mother, and your sister pain and embarrassment, I see no reason for you to engage with these individuals if you don't wish to. That said, if they have questions about your father's medical history that could be relevant to them, consider providing the answers." Next letter is from Curtailing in California. "Dear Abby, my brother and his wife have been married for 40 years. They moved out of state 10 years ago. We no longer get together for holidays, and the only time I talk to my brother is when it concerns our parents, whom I take care of. 2 years ago, my sister-in-law informed me that she never really cared for me and has issues with my family. When I asked her why, she accused me of being a liar. I don't know why she feels this way. I talked to my brother about it, and his answer was vague. Although my sister-in-law has issues, she still wants to exchange birthday and Christmas presents. I am finding it difficult to purchase a gift for someone who doesn't care for me. Is there a nice way to say I no longer want to exchange gifts and would rather we just exchange cards? I don't want to cause another family feud. Signed, Curtailing in California. Dear Curtailing, you should have stopped the gift exchange 2 years ago when your sister-in-law told you she had never really cared for you. Tell your brother you no longer feel the joy in it that you did before his wife told you what she did and that you would prefer to send cards from now on. Don't worry about causing another family feud. Your family is already fractured, and I doubt that once your parents are gone, he and his wife will be sticking around, so don't be surprised when it happens. You're a good daughter, and you have my sympathy. Last one, it's just a letter to the readers from Dear Abby. Dear readers, tonight is Halloween. I hope that any celebration you have is creative, fun, and safe in accordance with the guidelines and conditions in your location. Happy Halloween, everyone. In addition, daylight savings time ends at 2 a.m. Sunday. Don't forget to turn your clocks back 1 hour at bedtime tonight. And while you're at it, be sure to change the batteries in your fire alarms and smoke detectors. Love, Abby. One last look at the weather for today. Mostly sunny, increasingly windy. A high of 58 degrees today. Winds west-northwest, 15 to 25 miles an hour. Tonight, clear skies, wind subsiding. Wind still northwest at 12 to 25 miles an hour, but going down, a low of 27 tonight. Cooler, plenty of sunshine tomorrow. 44 degrees for the high. Winds northwest, 7 to 14. A low Sunday night of 28 degrees. Plenty of sunshine on Monday, a high of 61. Monday night's low of 37. Tuesday's high, plenty of sunshine, 67 for the high on Tuesday, and still mild on Wednesday, partly sunny, a high of 66. That does it for reading the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, October 31st, 2020. For the last hour, the stories have been read by me, John Reef. All materials heard on Iris are intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, call Iris toll-free at 877-404-4747. We thank you for listening to Iris, your radio reading service, and happy Halloween, everyone.